Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio, and we are fired up because this is the first episode after our big event we had last week with the WIT Connect event at the aquarium. That's an important event for us, and we're supporting our friends over there at WIT. They raise a lot of money to help encourage women to stay involved, get involved in technology, and it was a great event at the aquarium, and we were proud to be broadcasting from it and being part of it. And you can go to mywit.org to learn more about that great, great cause. And today is going to be a fun show. We got a couple guests, three guests from two different companies. We're going to kick it off with Lisa Donovan, and she's with Cressa. Welcome.
Thank you, Lee. I'm happy to be here.
Well, before we get too far into things, Lisa, are you familiar with WIT? You must know a little bit.
I do know a little about it.
Tell us about Cressa.
Cressa is the largest and only occupier-centric commercial real estate firm in the world, meaning that we only represent tenants and occupiers of office space, of commercial real estate, all types of commercial real estate.
So it's strictly commercial real estate.
It is. Mm-hmm.
And then you're more on the tenant side.
Only on the tenant side.
Exactly. And then what does that mean for a person who isn't familiar?
You know, basically for our clients, what that means is that we have no conflicts of interest. We are totally representing their interests only, whether that is in the location of office space or industrial space or the disposition of that space. We also have consulting services to help them with incentives in certain locations, to help them with labor issues. We also have work strategy to help them design the space to make sure that they are retaining and recruiting the top talent in their markets. But once again, the primary difference for us from other commercial real estate firms is that we only represent the tenants. Most firms represent both tenants and landlords, and we see that as a conflict of interest, so we separate the two.
And then, so walk me through, what is the typical client? Is it someone that's from out of state that's saying, hey, I'm new to Atlanta, I don't know anything, you know, what is the best, you know, I'm looking for a partner that kind of knows the lay of the land, or is it somebody that's growing, like, or a brand new company that's just first time getting space?
All of the above. We have a lot of startup clients. We also have portfolio clients that have offices around the globe, where we work with our sister companies across the globe to represent their interest in other countries as well as around the United States. We represent not-for-profits. We represent technology companies, municipalities, governments, growing firms, well-established firms. Once again, all on the tenant side.
Now, when you say commercial, does that include like warehouse and industrial?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, we have a very large industrial portfolio that we work with. And that, of course, is a very growing entity in this market right now.
And why do you think that is?
A lot of e-commerce definitely having an impact. We see a lot of that trying to get to that last mile. Mm-hmm. So Atlanta and Georgia is still a great place for companies to relocate. So lots of times with manufacturing components and or distribution center components.
Now, is this something that in Georgia we're uniquely kind of qualified to do some of this stuff because of the port? Does that come into play in this, or do people ask about that?
Not so much yet, but it's definitely becoming an issue. Of course, and in Savannah, it's an issue already, but mm-hmm. But definitely to our advantage. There's no doubt about that.
Because the stuff comes into the country, a lot of stuff through that port, and
exactly.
Now it's got to go somewhere.
Exactly. And of course, with them widening that port, then we're able to meet the needs of the larger container ships, mm-hmm. and that puts us in a very good position.
So now when you're having those initial conversations and say the person's a person that's coming, is unfamiliar with Atlanta, mm-hmm. do you do kind of a dog and pony show tour? Like what are the highlights when you're kind of selling Atlanta?
Right. Before they get to Atlanta, we will have met with them and talked about their strategy for growth, mm-hmm. or for relocation or expansion, whatever their needs are. And then, of course, Georgia has some great economic development teams, both through the state and through the local municipalities. I know Michael Starling was here not long ago,
sure.
talking about Dunwoody. So, there are people in that role around the state. And those are the first things we do is we meet with them to see what the potential incentives are for those clients if they're moving into the market. Mm-hmm. And then also, of course, to see what the labor market is. That's a huge issue for new companies coming into the state right now.
So then they're asking, are we going to have trouble finding employees? That's a big concern.
That's a great question, isn't it? around, you know, the country, we're hearing, do we have the right employees?
Right.
We definitely have labor still, even at 3.5% unemployment. But do we have the right employees, the skilled employees that we're going to need to continue to meet these needs? And it's a question yet to be determined. I think the state's doing some great things with some technical schools and making sure that we're doing training, work and job training. And I think we remain in a great position. I mean, Atlanta has so many fabulous universities right here in our backyard, which, of course, is a big, big pool for new companies coming into the state.
And then do you, as part of, you're kind of a liaison, or is the economic development the kind of the quarterback of this relationship, and then you're a resource for them?
We would work directly with the tenant or the occupier of the space.
Mm-hmm.
The economic development groups, of course, are working for the state or their municipality, but they also recognize that they want this new entity coming
right
into their market. Increases tax base, increases job growth, so all of those things are beneficial to everyone.
Now, I find, because we've been doing the show for a while, so I've got to interview a wide variety of business leaders, something that makes Georgia unique, and I don't know if this is the way it is around the country, but it seems like there's so many different industries. Like, we're very diversified, our portfolio of industries that we serve, whereas one, if there's a downturn in one, it may not be kind of a downturn for the whole kind of area.
That's a great point, Lee. And it's absolutely the case that we are very fortunate. We have, you know, a huge number of Fortune 500 companies in all different industry types. And then, as we talked about earlier, we are becoming a bigger and bigger manufacturing and distribution state.
Mm-hmm.
We have, you know, we've been able to win some new business through, you know, the automobile industry. So I think you actually just came upon a great point when people were talking about the next recession, the next slowdown. I think Atlanta is particularly well positioned to walk through that a little less scathed than some other areas.
Now, are you seeing kind of activity in certain niches more than others right now? Are there kind of trends or hot areas?
Multifamily is definitely hot right now. It has not slowed down. It's been that way for several years now, and it has not slowed down. If you've been to West Midtown lately,
mm-hmm,
you'll see a lot of cranes in the air there. Midtown is still a very hot market.
That perimeter seems...
Looking out your window right now at everything
like
that's going
cranes,
on.
Right.
Exactly. And, of course, Central Perimeter is still the largest submarket in the city,
mm-hmm,
and a lot of corporate... companies here. So I think we're pretty spread out as far as where that activity is, which once again bodes well for us.
Now, are you still seeing some of this kind of live, work, play, kind of
absolutely
these hybrid?
Absolutely.
Which is a relatively new, right? I guess maybe it's old, but then now they've kind of refreshed it.
Yeah, it's definitely become, you know, an overused term perhaps, in that it's been talked about for the last
right
decade. But the thing that's changing in that arena, I think, is that it's not just in the urban core of the city any longer.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the exurbs and within each of these smaller markets. They are building these work, live, play communities within their own smaller markets.
And those are, I mean, if you go to like a big city, New York, or one of these really economically dense cities,
mm-hmm,
that's how, I mean, at the bottom is retail. People live above it. Like,
exactly,
it's not a new thing.
Exactly. But it's new to Georgia.
Right. But it's just kind of reframed as something they're doing on purpose.
Exactly. No, I agree. And I think it is where people want to be. They want a sense of community.
And walkability is
exactly
important. Are you finding that more and more?
Absolutely. Especially with Atlanta traffic.
Right. What about the Beltline? Have you seen that impact?
I love the Beltline. I think it's a phenomenal thing for us. I think it definitely helps connect the dots in areas where we need to do that and further that connectivity. I was very fortunate several years ago to work on the Ponce City Market development just as that was coming online. Fascinating project, and to see how the Beltline basically fed into that project and how the project supported the Beltline was a great exercise. I enjoyed it very much.
Now, tell us a little bit about the commercial real estate industry as a whole in terms of women.
Mm-hmm.
Is that an area where is it predominantly men, predominantly women? What's kind of the lay of the land there?
You know, I think we're not unlike several other industries, but it is definitely predominantly men and has been historically. That has changed to some degree over the years, but we still have a ways to go, not just with women, but people of color,
mm-hmm,
you know, all walks of life. And I think it's indicative of the fact that commercial real estate until recently was not a particularly well-known profession. People didn't really know what that meant.
So when they heard the word real estate, they thought, sell my home.
Exactly.
And that's exactly. Predominantly women, I would imagine.
A lot of women, even though more men are going into that field. Yeah. But yes, I mean, it's just not something that people really recognized. I've been doing it for over 25 years, and I can't tell you the number of times I've said to someone, I'm in commercial real estate, and the next thing out of their mouth is, oh, hey, my neighbor or my cousin or my rabbi wants to sell their house, right? So yeah, but now you can actually get a degree in commercial real estate. Mm-hmm. It's much more well known. But back to the original question, when people don't understand it and they don't see a career path in it, unless they know someone in it, they are going to look like that person. Right. Mm-hmm. So as the only woman in my role at this point, I do feel an added sense of responsibility to make sure that other women and minorities see that this is a career path option for them as well.
Now, in here, we've had the opportunity to work with a lot of women kind of networking / business associations within different niches, such as the Women in Technology. But I've also got to interview women in sales. Mm-hmm. And it's like, there's groups. Is there a Women in Commercial Real Estate group?
There is a group called CRU, which is Commercial Real Estate Women. It's been around for many years and has grown over the years and has definitely been a great platform for women to learn more about the industry and network and receive education that helps them propel their
careers. What about the mentorship? That in Women in Technology, that's a big initiative, is to mentor, you know, people who have been there to people who haven't been there, and show them a path and just give them kind of shadowing and opportunity to see what it looks like from
absolutely.
Their chair.
Absolutely. CRU does that. Also, the Atlanta Commercial Board of Realtors does that, mm-hmm. and has a strong mentoring program as well. And I would go a step further and say that you need not only mentors, but you need advocates. Mm-hmm. You need someone who is actually...
That's going to sponsor you
exactly.
and put some political capital on the line.
Exactly.
Do you find that? Because that's what I've seen, that's where a disconnect is. People think like, oh, I told you how to do it. You're mm-hmm. on your own. Thank
yeah,
you. Bye.
It, right.
Go do it.
Exactly. We'll have lunch again.
Right.
Yeah.
Tell me
yeah,
how it goes.
It doesn't work that way. Yeah.
But then it's more of like, hey, you know what? Lisa's great. You should think about her for that position. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a little different. That's where you're kind of putting your reputation on the line.
Exactly. And I would submit that in my career, it has been more the advocates than the mentors mm-hmm. that have made a difference, only in that mentors were not as readily available for me when I was coming up through the ranks. But I can absolutely say that I have achieved the successes that I have because of people advocating for me.
And then when did you know that this is going to be something I'm going to be able to make a career out of this? Like, was there a light bulb? Did something happen that where you're like, I'm good at this. This is something that I can do and I can see myself doing.
That's a great question. I always thought I'm a liberal arts major. You know, I thought I was going to write the world's greatest next novel. You know, I was going to do some. Of course,
you
I
can
was
do that
20
on the side.
And, yeah, exactly. and I even worked in publishing for a short period of time, and then purely by chance got into this industry many years ago, and then found that I was good at it. And the primary reason I think I'm good at it is because of those relationships building mm-hmm. skills. I like people. It's not a pretend. It's who I am.
Right.
It comes across. But I also work really hard, and that builds trust. And once again, that then leads to those advocates that we talked about.
And then, so you had the opportunity to do it. Like at some point, somebody said, yeah, let's let Lisa do this one.
literally, I lived in Alaska for a while and I moved to Atlanta and I was talking to some people and met some people.
And you weren't in real estate.
I was not in real estate. And I met this gentleman who said, so what are you thinking about? And, you know, we talked a little bit and he said, you'd be really good at what I do. And the next thing I knew, I was working for a small development firm here in Atlanta.
And then as a salesperson?
I was doing management and sales. I was doing both for a small property.
So you got to kind of see what it looks like on the other side.
Exactly. It gave me a taste for both.
Right.
And then from there, because of deals that I did and transacted, I was suggested for a job with a bigger firm, and that mm-hmm. led to something else, which led to something else.
And then, at some point, you're in there, and mm-hmm. you're doing it for larger firms, mm-hmm. and you're looking around, and you're like, am I the only one? Like, how quickly did that kind of happen?
I think women in my generation and my era in this business probably can relate to the fact that you know you're the minority. I mean, it's blatantly obvious. But at the same time, there's a lot of work to do. And you just put your head down and you do the work. And you don't really think about it, I think, sometimes until after the fact.
Right.
And
you when look you're looking back.
Exactly. And say, wait a minute, I should have progressed faster through that period. Or, yes, there are those issues that, you know, you see in the news today that come up. But for the most part, I've been very fortunate and had lots of great relationship building over the years that have continued to propel me forward.
So now that you're at Cresso, what's your kind of vision of how this is going to play out?
You know, as the market leader and managing principal at Cresso, I walked into a situation with a really great group of people. That's huge, that you already have strong professionals with strong ethics, strong integrity, totally believe in doing the right thing, and a strong financially successful company. What we need to do here in Atlanta is grow this office after it having been kind of at the same point for an extended period of time. Mm-hmm. And we need to do that not only by getting our name out there more, so I thank you for allowing me to be here today, but also by recruiting, bringing in some different people with different ideas and different backgrounds, and being a little less homogenous than we are right now, which, you know, to their credit, I think is one of the reasons they hired me. But there's a huge opportunity in Atlanta, especially as exclusive occupier service provider, for us to grow our business here.
Because you're differentiating. You're putting kind of a stake in the ground.
We are.
And saying this is what we believe, and this is why we believe what we believe.
Exactly. And we believe it's to our clients' benefit.
Right. And there's no kind of hidden agenda.
Nope.
This is how we go to market, by watching your back and serving you, period. Amen.
Amen.
Right?
Yes,
and then, and not everybody's doing that. They're trying to have it both ways.
Well, and you know, especially in the larger firms where they're looking for what they call recurring income, especially if they're public, that recurring income is critical, of course.
Right.
And for us, we have chosen this path primarily because we do believe it's in our clients' best interest, and therefore it makes us successful.
And then Cresso is based here in Atlanta?
No, it's based in D.C.,
And this is the Atlanta office.
Correct. It's been in existence since 1992.
Mm-hmm. And then you're charged with growing the Metro Atlanta or the state of Georgia?
Metro Atlanta. We do business all over the state, but for the most part, we work the state from the Atlanta office.
And then so what do you need more of? How can we help?
Once again, I want to make sure that people know what Cresso's differentiator is, because it's a company that's been around for many, many years. Mm-hmm. But I don't think we've done a good job of branding ourselves and making sure that people do know what our differentiator is. And to me, it's so crystal clear that I literally want to sing it over the waves.
And then for you, you want to get in front of more, is it the C-suite? Like, who has to know about you?
Typically, it's the C-suite. And more in today's world, the director of human resources is a primary player in real estate decisions, because it does have such an impact on recruiting and retaining talent.
And then in any specific industries, or just anybody? Like, are you targeting, like, are you starting out with, okay, we're going to start with startups, or we're going to start with manufacturing, or are you going after any? I know you work with everybody, but are you kind of aiming at certain ones first?
We currently represent, you know, people from every industry type at this point, but I will tell you that one of our focus is on that mid-level portfolio user who maybe has, you know, 10, 15 offices around the state, or may have 100 offices around the globe. Because we do have a greater reach now than we've ever had before from a corporate perspective and a global perspective. And so we definitely want to put that in front of our clients to make sure they know that we can help them in those arenas as well.
So then if there's an Atlanta-based company that's growing rapidly, you're a good fit for them.
Absolutely.
And then if there's somebody that's coming into the market, you're also a good fit for them, because you kind of know your way around here pretty well.
Exactly. You said it perfectly, Lee. Thank you.
All right. So if somebody wanted to learn more, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Cresso.com. I am happy to talk to anybody and everybody that might be looking to learn more about the industry as a career path.
So you need talent.
Absolutely need the talent. And then also, of course, we're always looking to help new clients.
And then when you say talent now, are these people seasoned already, or you're looking for people that are in school? Like, what?
You know, some of both. Mm-hmm. You know, we're currently recruiting for what we call a client coordinator position, which could readily be someone that's right out of school. And then we lay out a career path for for them. You mm-hmm. do this for a couple of years, and then you do this. And then if you want to be an advisor salesperson,
then you can become Lisa.
Absolutely.
It's that simple,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. If you want to, that's
you
totally
want to.
Up to you.
All
trust
right.
me, my advisors are much more financially successful.
And that's just Cressa.com, C-R-E-S-A.
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story.
No, thank you. I enjoyed it.
All right. Hang with us. We got one more set of guests. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have the folks from Hope Springs Distillery, Betsy Dahlberg and Paul Allen. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank
We're
you.
Glad to be here.
What's your office situation?
Yeah, can I help you with that?
I know somebody.
Ours are kind of unique. We like buildings that don't blow up.
That's good.
That is the main reason that fire starts is it blows up. So, I mean, there's some hazard things, and you can't just put them
I'm
anywhere.
Sure Lisa can yeah. help you there. So tell us about Hope Springs Distillery. What is it? What are you guys up to?
We're a small craft distillery. We're out in Lilburn, which surprises a lot of people, but I want to assure everyone that Lilburn is really on the go these days. Paul and I found ourselves in our early 60s in a recession with no employment and no chance of any employment because, did I mention, we were in our 60s. So we had to have our own business.
But you could pick any business, you know.
Well, we knew we needed to hire ourselves, so it had to be something that we liked to do.
Uh-huh.
So we have made beer and wine at home for over 20 years, and I didn't want to start a brewery because it seems like there's a brewery on every corner now.
Right.
So I said to Paul, look, we've been reading about these craft distilleries. There aren't many of them yet. Let's do that.
Mm-hmm.
We could do that. So that's what we did.
And then what do you distill?
Right now we have three products. We make vodka, gin, and absinthe, and those are all based on neutral grain spirits that is made from wheat.
And then do you need to be in Georgia to do this, or you could have done this anywhere? You just happen to live in Georgia?
We just happen to live in Georgia. The craft distillery movement started about 15 years ago, and it primarily took root in the West, California, Oregon, and Washington, and the Northeast. New York is very big. It was a little slower in the South because we had some laws from the 18th century right, that needed to be changed.
That happens.
And fortunately, they got changed slowly, and still we're working on some. But
what are the laws around? Like you're not allowed to do this, period, or you're not allowed to sell it?
For a while, we weren't allowed to do it at all. But also, we were not allowed to sell directly from the distillery to the public.
Mm-hmm.
That got changed 2 years ago. We have a limit on how much we can sell to each person who comes in, but we are allowed to sell.
And then previously, you had to sell through distributors? Is that how it used to work?
In the state of Georgia, it's a three-tiered system. Mm-hmm. You can be a manufacturer, a distributor, or a retailer, but you cannot have an ownership interest in any two of those. You can only be in one.
One at a time.
Yeah. So we have to have a distributor,
mm-hmm.
and we are very happy with our distributor. Let me give a shout-out to Savannah Distributing Company. They have been wonderful to us and have been so helpful.
Now, were all the distributors wooing you? They were trying to get
no.
on board? Is that how it works? Or is it more like you're picking, like, please pick me?
It's kind of like a friendly dog sniffing. Sort of like, I'm not sure I want this one.
There's so many that they can choose from?
You can get a little one-person distributorship if you want.
Uh-huh.
If you're willing to put your... They own your brand at that point.
Oh, so you're locking in with them? So it's
important.
Risky on your part.
Yeah, yeah. Our particular...
You got to choose wisely.
Yeah. Our particular... I believe he's the director, is his title, came in to see us a year before we had any equipment. And he laid out, I'd like to see a label like this and a bottle like this. He had forgotten a year later when he came in and said, this is the most incredible. This label is perfect. I got to have pictures. These boxes are perfect, Eric. You remember who
told
us? And it was kind of like the wedding ceremony happened, so to speak. And
so he was really watching your back.
Yeah.
Right. And then so have you found his advice accurate?
Yes.
He has not led us wrong one time ever.
That's good. Good partners, that's the secret. Yeah, yeah. I mean, without good partners, it's hard to do anything.
That's the most important decision that you make when you start a distillery, right? Is who your distributor is going to be. And fortunately, we chose right.
So now when you did that, had you distilled, or this was still at the idea? Like, where's the chicken and the egg in this?
Think of how a glacier is formed. That is how you start a distillery.
Because don't you need a lot of equipment, or you could do this kind of in your house?
No, like you need a lot kitchen. Of equipment, oh, no, and you cannot no, do no this house, in your no, house.
Because
like,
the beer stuff you're doing in your house, right?
Yeah, that's legal, but distilling is not. Let me make that
clear. So you
got
to go all in. Yes. So you have to say, we're going to really do this, so we got to buy some big stuff that can blow up.
Even more than you know, because before you can even apply for your very first federal license.
It's a federal license.
You have to have a lot of licenses.
Well, to start.
To begin, start federally.
Yes, you have to. You have to have lockable premises and have your equipment on order. So you have just spent like $250,000 before you can even apply for a license.
The lead time on our equipment was about a year and a half. So you've taken the truck, backed it up, and put the money in, and you wait.
And you thought in your 60s this was a good retirement program.
Sure. It seemed like a good idea at the time. Yeah. All I can say is maybe we were drinking that night.
Well.
All right, so a couple years before you have this idea, and then all of a sudden now the equipment starts arriving. You have to put it somewhere.
Except all of a sudden part. No,
right, except a year and a half.
You have to, before you apply.
In my head, a movie's going by and a music, you know, montage is going by.
And the film breaks several times. No, you have to have the building ready.
Okay, and so the equipment. So you knew ordered. The building ahead of time before the equipment.
Then
is that true?
Yes. Uh-huh. I did layouts of everything before we had the everything. Mm-hmm. I had to tell them where this imaginary equipment was going to go and draw it.
And then even though technology might change in that year and a half, and then that might not work anymore.
Sure, yeah. If we move a tank inside of the distillery, we have to request it first. You don't just go, really, you don't just go move.
So me and you can't just grab an end.
No.
All right, so now you had the space, you had the stuff, it's all coming in.
Then you have to get your state permits.
So then you at that point, now the state can say, nah.
They did.
Sure. Yeah, and they did.
The federal says yes, and the state says no.
Yes.
We had a few more hoops to jump through, which we were not expecting.
They make it so easy.
Oh, yeah.
So
you didn't talk to any distillery folks out there.
We did. Everybody's problems are different.
Everything's different. Wow.
So it's one of the classes that Paul took. The guy who was teaching it said, this has been the most special day since I started this distillery. Nothing has gone wrong.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I mean, that's everybody's.
Where is like the recipe and it tastes good and people want to buy it? Like, when does that come into play?
3 years later.
So you have to invest all this money and all this time, and you don't even have a recipe? Or you have an idea for a recipe?
We knew from the beginning that we were going to start with vodka because we, again, wrongly
How
assumed.
How many vodkas are there?
1.5 million.
Made correctly, I only know of one other one. Honestly, you start with wheat. If you start with anything else, you are
not.
Mistaken.
He's prejudiced.
Yes, I am. Yes,
well,
I am.
It's important to put a stake in the ground. We've already established that.
Yeah.
We knew we were going to start with vodka because you don't have to age vodka. So as soon as you make it,
it's
can bottle
ready to
it
go.
And ship it. Mm-hmm. And then I always wanted to make gin because I like gin.
That's always a good. It's your business. Your rules.
And there's a young man who came to see us to pick our brains about starting his own distillery.
Because you had so much experience.
Well, more than he did at that point. And he heard what we had to say and found out how much it was going to cost him. And he said, can I come work with you? And we said, yeah. So he's the third member of our team. He couldn't be here today. Hi, Jazz, if you're listening. And he's very creative. And he wanted to make absinthe. So that's what we make right now, vodka, gin, and absinthe.
Because you didn't care. Did you have a preference, Paul?
L'Oreal is my preference. But, it's whatever we like is what we make.
Uh-huh.
And it's worked out rather well.
Okay, so now at some point you start making it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the vodka was first
idea.
Still?
Yeah.
And then you did the gin and the absinthe simultaneously or in order?
The vodka was first, and the absinthe was very shortly after that. And then it wasn't until 1.5 years later that we actually came out with a gin.
Even though that was the one you wanted from the beginning.
Yeah, because
it's your company.
As I said, we've had a lot of on-the-job training, and I discovered that you don't just make this stuff and give it to the distributor to sell. You actually have to go out and promote it yourself.
Really?
So that takes some time and some energy.
While you're doing other things, maybe.
Yeah. So
that's what jazz is for.
Well, no.
No, that's not what jazz is for.
He works in the distillery, but I'm the one who goes out with the sales reps.
He's the guy that crawls inside of the tanks to clean them. That's the most valuable.
Yeah.
Because just take a look
at me. That's what sold you, right?
I can go into one of the tanks. I will never come out.
Come out of the tank. It's one way.
Yeah, he's 24. He can pop in.
Yeah. So now you start selling. How'd you know, like, hey, people are buying this. This must be good. Like, when does that come?
Well, again, the distributor has been just
so very, that's
very
the key
helpful.
Person.
Yeah. Yeah. So they sell it. They actually sell it to the retailers.
Are they tweaking, like, hey, you know what? It would be cool if you made it peachy or like strawberry or.
They give us ideas from time to time. I'm very happy to say that everyone likes our gin. It's not like anybody else's. It has a unique recipe. And
where do you get the recipes?
My head.
Do you just make it up?
Yep.
But how do you know what it's going to taste like?
And just 16 tries later. 16 batches.
16 doesn't sound like a lot.
It was right there.
But you got to make like a ginormous amount?
No.
16
no.
times?
No. I have a bench still.
So you have like test tubes and measuring.
I have a little still that sits on the table that I can make a gallon at a time.
Is that like legal?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
For it is if I do it in the distillery with my license.
That's a safe area.
Yes. Yes. And you
it's
tell
not
the,
in the woods.
Right. You tell the federal government, here's where my bench still will sit. And if they ever come in to see it and it's not there, I'm in trouble.
Right. A lot of rules.
And a lot of paperwork.
When the Georgia Department of Revenue guy came in, he had to bend down to get in the door. I'm a big guy. He is much bigger. I mean, bulletproof vest, weaponry. And I said, what's that
for? To check you out? You have to wear a bulletproof vest to check out your operation.
Apparently, it's not unusual to have a distillery request for the state approval, and if they can bypass that, that's all the distributor looks at. Do you have state approval? They will come into an empty building. There's no equipment. There's no people. There's no product. They're just looking to, could you sign this off for
right.
me? And actually, cleaning up, moonlighting you can bring, if you could bring in moonshine legally and sell it legally, you can make a fortune because there's no cost to what the guy's making it
right
down by the river.
So now moonshine is a separate, is that an actual drink that you can sell through a distributor?
It is.
Yeah, our distributor said you can bring anything to me to sell except for moonshine because when startups get started up, that's the easiest thing to make and there's a flood in the market.
Right.
There's a bunch of it out there.
So now from a marketing standpoint, how do you attack this? Because there are so many competitors.
We are really trying to stay local. We use local businesses as our suppliers every time we can.
35 is the current count of local businesses.
And everybody else who is in distilling can try to become internationally known if they want to. I'm mostly interested in having everybody in Metro Atlanta and North Georgia know about our spirits and drink them. Mm-hmm. If I can accomplish that, Paul and I can actually retire.
Yeah, someday.
Someday.
Yeah, our first product, the vodka, has a picture of a fellow named Lilburn Trigg Myers on it. Get the Lilburn there.
Right.
It's the namesake of the city. Mm-hmm.
So you don't want a George Clooney exit on this?
No. But I do, that's what we're striving for, is to make our spirits really well known.
In Georgia.
Right where we are.
Right. Yeah.
And if we can accomplish that, I will be a happy woman.
And then so you accomplish that by distributing it through your distributor, but you have to go out there and work. Like, are you working like the getting to know the bars? Like, who is
yes.
the one?
Yes.
Or is
yes.
it the liquor stores?
Yes. Yes.
Like,
Paul and I have been.
Festivals? You're doing all that stuff?
Actually, yes. All of it. Paul and I have been out doing hand selling in stores.
Hand selling?
Yeah, where we stand there with our top hats on for our top hat vodka and just talk to everybody who comes in and tell them.
And win them over one. customer at a time.
Yeah. Also, I get to go out with a sales rep from the distributor. I have been in the habit of going out once a week with a different one every week, and they take me to some really cool places, and I talk to some really cool bartenders.
So you're going to the bar and say, showing them drink?
Yes.
And like, so you have to create, you know, signature drinks?
Yeah. Actually, the bartenders are so much better at that than I am. I just let them taste the spirits and say to them, if you create a drink, let me know. And, you know, I'll promote it, too. And they say, oh, yeah, great.
We like that.
Yeah. And then the other thing, we do festivals. We were in the Atlanta Food and Wine Festival here a couple of weeks back.
Right.
And you get to a lot of people that way.
Right. Have you been to Afternoon in the Country?
We have not, but we are thinking about trying to do that this year.
Yeah, big fan. They've been 7 years in a row.
Oh, cool.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a great event. Great event. And what about, so how do you choose the festivals?
Some of them choose us. We've done a couple of big ones. Loburn did a Lil crawl, right. As in we've only got two restaurants, right, so one distillery, and for $30 you could go to any of the restaurants, grab a bite, you can get a drink from any of three places, and at the end there's a concert at the Music on Main Street event, and they were fearful. They said, we hope to sell 100 tickets. They cut off sales at 208.
Wow.
And we had 300 people roughly in our distillery. So that's been pretty successful.
So now for you, is the business having tours of the distillery? Is that part of it? So that's part of it. And then, but the main thing is to get liquor stores? Or who's the big buyer?
Both. We want to be in all the liquor stores because if somebody goes to a bar and has a drink made with our spirits, then they want to go to the store and be able and to buy it to take it home. So we want both, actually.
But these are all kind of separate constituents. So how do you, I mean, it's just you three, right? Or you have a whole team?
It's just the three of us. But the distributor has 80 salespeople.
Right.
Actually, probably more than that now because every time I talk to them, they're hiring somebody else. So, you know, I've got a huge sales force working for me.
Right. And then, so that's been the biggest impact. Without them, this thing wouldn't have worked as well.
Right.
And then for you, if somebody wanted to try it, what's do you have to go to the liquor store and hope it's there? Hope for hope?
Yeah. anyone who goes to their favorite retailer and doesn't find it can ask their...
That's what you want them to do, right?
They can ask the store owner to order it for them from Savannah Distributing. And Savannah is able to sell to any retailer in the state, so anybody can get it.
And then what happens on the tour if I go in for a tour?
Depends on what day you're there. If it was this last weekend where it was really, really hot, we do a very quick tour.
It's fast.
And then we go in the tasting room where it's air conditioned.
The tasting room is the highlight.
Yes.
Like first there's the, oh, that's cool how you did that, but let's get out of here. It makes a lot of noise and it's hot.
Yes.
And then now we go into the tasting room, and then what happens
in the tasting room? I can give anyone... person 1/2 ounce of alcohol per day. So I give very, very tiny little sips.
So it's a true tasting.
Yes, it is a taste only. But I am also allowed to sell cocktails. So after you have a taste, if you liked what you tasted, you might want to order a cocktail.
Right. So it's like a mini bar with your stuff?
It is.
And then do you sell like any, if I say make a mojito, you can do that, or it has to only be the stuff that you have there?
I can only put alcohol in a cocktail that I have made in-house. Now, it doesn't necessarily have to be something that's for sale outside the tasting room. One week, someone sent me a message through Facebook that they were coming in and would really like to have Cosmopolitans. One of the ingredients in a Cosmopolitan is triple sec. Well, I don't make triple sec, and I thought, wonder what I'm going to do about that. So I got out my bench still, and I made...
the Hope Springs triple sec,
which is
coming soon.
I made a bottle full of triple sec, which I only use in the tasting room.
So now, what's the funnest part for you?
The funnest part?
Yeah.
I've really enjoyed going out doing the sales, but also I really enjoy it when people come in to see us.
Mm-hmm. So now, had you done sales before, like in your career?
Many, many years ago.
Ask her what she used to do for a living.
What did you used to do?
I'm a recovering attorney.
So you were an attorney.
She's better now. She's coming along.
I'm doing honest work now. I'm making booze.
What about you, Paul?
I used to be an engineer.
An engineer.
I was an electrical engineer for about 2 days before I realized there were a bunch of people in a factory on the other side making noise and making the stuff and cursing me because I didn't know what I was doing. That's an industrial engineer who takes designs and actually makes them into something useful.
So that's what you ended up doing?
I did that for 43 years and said, I'm going to be out in the factory. Call me if you need something. Need a sample or something.
So now, but going from, so you both work for other people or were you an attorney for your own, in your own firm?
I worked for other people even as an attorney.
Right. So now you're, this is your own thing and you're making your own rules and you're doing this kind of on your terms. How has that been?
I love it.
Is this more rewarding? Is it, I mean, more risk. You're obviously taking more risk.
There's a lot more sleepless nights.
Right.
But when the rewards come, we get them.
What was the first time you were high-fiving? What was a high-five moment?
I think it was the first time we went in a liquor store and saw a bottle of Top Hat on the shelf.
That's what, as an industrial engineer, I remember I made an electronic toy, one of the first, and yeehaw. And I almost got arrested out of Toys R Us. Like, hey, look, why don't you buy this for your kid? It's great. I made it. Come on. I love doing this. Yeah, and that's what you see when you see a bottle of your stuff that,
all that work, and then now someone's kind of checking out with that, and it's real.
Yeah.
And you're making an impact.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations. It's a wonderful story, and thank you so much for sharing it.
Well, thank you for having us.
Thank you for listening.
Now, if somebody wanted to get a hold of it, is the website to get tours? Like, what are all the coordinates and the best way?
We have a website. It is hopespringsdistillery.com. We also are on Facebook and Instagram. And we have discovered that more people look at our social media sites than our website. Mm-hmm. So if we have news for the week, it usually goes on Facebook and Instagram rather than our website.
Is that a jazz thing or that's, he's 24, he's...
No, we do that.
You do that too?
Yeah.
The engineer guy is on Facebook and Instagram.
If you'd like to hear a story about
I want to
that.
See your Instagram, Paul.
He does the Instagram very well.
One day Jazz saw me fumbling with my cell phone, and he said, well, if you want me to help you with it, my generation's real good at that.
Right.
I went into instant geezer mode and said, hey, you got the Google on your phone? Google Simon cell phone, S-I-M-O-N cell phone. Wow, what a piece of, it was made in 1990-something. Made in Braselton, Georgia. Yeah. Who was the lead design on that? Was this you?
So you know your way around a little
Jazz.
Bit.
Slightly know my way around electronic devices.
And the social media. So you have an aesthetic? Is it like your photography?
It's passable. I did a co-op in a place called Eastman Kodak photography.
So you learned there.
New York. Yeah.
And then, so that's part of it too, is you got to make pretty pictures of the drinks and colorful and all that and lighting them on fire. Is there any fire involved in your drinks?
No fire. Not in a distillery.
I can't see wasting alcohol.
It's a good show, right? That's part of it in the bar. No?
No.
Not for you guys.
No fire.
All right. So one more time, the website and social media coordinates.
Website is hopespringsdistillery.com. And Facebook is Hope Springs Distillery. And Instagram is Hope Springs Distillery.
And then you do tours on the weekends or
We're open to the public on Fridays and Saturdays from 2 to 6. But if we are there and we're not busy, we will be happy to open the door. I recommend that people call us first to make sure that we are there and not busy. We can open the tasting room in 2 seconds if we're there.
We know the owners.
All right. Well, thank you and best of luck.
Thank you.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Sanjay Touré and Blake. How do you say your last name?
Candabat.
We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.